I'm Tim Brody, and you're listening to Moving Forward, a podcast about relationships, teams, leaders, and how to get the best out of all of them. We're continuing in our project to connect with folks in the police environment to hear more about the people who decide to take on the mantle of to protect and serve. This show features Donna Marilyn McDonald. She's an incredible woman with a military background who chose to work within the police environment as a dispatcher. She worked for 31 years through hardship, struggles, and sorrows, and she graced our show to share a couple of her more heartwarming experiences. What was your role in the military?
I was a driver.
You're MSC.
MSC op, yeah.
Yes.
Messy
yes.
op, yeah. I was with the 33 Service Battalion in Sydney.
Then you joined that reg force and off you went to Borden. And then
at the age of 18, thinking I knew everything and knew absolutely nothing.
And then what made you leave the military?
Well, I met my first husband and I was pregnant with our child. So I got out of the military because back then being pregnant and the military were not two things that went together.
Yeah. I remember that. You got out of the military, and where did you go?
Well, I just stayed in Borden, Ontario with my then husband, and his job brought us here to Nova Scotia, and this is where he left me and Julio here, and he went off on his next life, and I was back in Nova Scotia where I started my career with the Dartmouth Police Department in 1984.
Why police? What drew you towards that?
It was happenstance. I was outside of our apartment in Dartmouth, and I was needed to get up to Shearwater Base, which is where my then husband was working. And there was a couple of guys that were asking questions about something that was going on in the neighborhood. And I got talking to them, and it turns out they were undercover police officers. And we got talking, and they found out my background, and they said, well, we're looking for dispatchers, you might want to come in for a job interview. And I thought, oh, okay, that sounds like a plan, because I did need a job. And I did that. I went and had an interview, and with my background in the military, I'm not going to say they were quick to hire me because they were a little bit concerned about hiring a woman for dispatch, even though there was only a few at the time. I think I was the fourth woman maybe that was hired there.
When you were hired, what went through your mind about your expectations with regards to your role, with regards to the job, the work?
Well, I realized very quickly that I was walking into a male-dominated environment, which I was fairly comfortable with being in the male-dominated environment of the Canadian Armed Forces. But I didn't realize exactly what I was walking into. I went into it naive. I went into it wanting to help people. I mean, that's, I think, why anybody joins the military, joins a police department, is a sense of service and wanting to help your community and the greater good. I think that's basically would have been the main reason. I started in 1984 with the Dartmouth Police Department, and I was basically just thrown in. There's the radio. Here's a little bit of information. Go for it. And it was literally on the job training, taking phone calls from people that it was stunning the amount of people who needed help. You didn't realize. Most people don't realize what they need the police department for. So I very quickly learned it, and it was everything, the gambit from, you know, really severe emergencies where it's car accidents to someone being broken into, where somebody just needs a voice, just needs somebody to talk to because they're at their end of the rope, literally sometimes. Yeah, it was a very interesting start to my police career in Dartmouth. We are the front line. We are the first responders, communications for people in dire emergencies when they call. At that time, it was 4105, long before 911 came into being here in Nova Scotia. And we looked after everything in communications. We looked after the city field, getting a hold of city field, getting a hold of the bridges, taxi companies, like whatever was going on, it was in communications. I also had to monitor the jail cells. I was a special constable, so I had to search female prisoners and do the job of taking people's calls who were at the end of their rope.
for someone that doesn't understand what dispatch looks like now, paint a picture for them.
Well, I'll start with then. When I started with Dartmouth Police, it was down on Wentworth Street, and we were a little room just off of the lunchroom and the locker room. And everything that we did, every phone call that came in, we had these little cards that had, you know, what the address was, who the person was, what their problem was. And then we timestamped when we dispatched it, when police were en route, when police arrived, and when it was completed. And we'd write the notes. That's how we had to do it, with a pen in your hand. And on a busy Friday night, it could get pretty crazy. And that stack of cards would grow big pretty quick. So that's how it started. We had a radio. We had what was called a CPIC machine that was owned then by the RCMP, that you would run plates or run people and get the information. And it was very lengthy. Now, if you had a missing person report, you had to fill everything out and send it. And it was all done basically by hand. You know, for a lot of the girls, and most of us were girls at that time, all of the communicators, it grew. All of a sudden, you went from two people dispatching, two female dispatchers, and then there were four. And then it just exponentially grew over the years. When we amalgamated in 1996, we went from having two or three dispatchers in Dartmouth to being in a room with about eight people in Halifax. In 1997, the 911 center was built over top of the new fire station in Bedford. So when the 911 center came into fruition, then they started training, multi-training. So you were able to do 911 dispatch, police dispatch, fire dispatch. And you had to do it all, because in one shift, you could do all of those things. It's a tremendous responsibility, and it's about time it's getting the respect it deserves.
If it weren't for the dispatchers, the folks in the uniform simply couldn't function. So I'm so glad that you're here to shed some light and put a spotlight on that function.
Well, we're that voice on the phone when people call up with their emergencies. And I think that's one of the things that's missing in police today, or when they talk about defunding the police and putting money into other places. I think the problem occurred when we as dispatchers, when I was with Dartmouth, you know, if there was a call that I wasn't really comfortable with, and I'd call the sergeant and say, or the corporal, and I'd say, you know, explain what it was. And he'd say, well, you're the dispatcher, you figure it out, and you do, you know, what needs to be done. Well, that was taken away from us, that being able to say, you know, I understand what you're going through right now, but this is not a police issue, and you're not going to get the police today. This is what you need to do. Here's a number you can call, or you need to get a hold of this. All of a sudden, in the mid-90s, there was a change of policy with the police department that police were to respond to everything. If you insisted on seeing the police, you got the police. Mm-hmm. So this was done, and police would even say to you, put a call on, and the police officer would say, are you kidding me? You're sending me on this call? And I can remember putting notes on calls. I'm not comfortable sending this call, or, you know, the corporal or sergeant would say, no, you have to send the call. They're insisting on seeing the police. So this went on and on and on until police are doing things that they shouldn't be doing. They're getting involved in things that police shouldn't be getting involved in. There are other places to look after those things. So that's what happened. Could be not a police issue. And the dispatcher should have been able to say, this is not a police issue. This is where you need to go. But that was taken away from us, where you just sent the police to everything. And now people are saying, well, why are the police doing this? And we should defund the police. There's the problem, in my humble opinion. It would be nice to get back to the place with people trained well enough to be able to say, you know, I understand how you're feeling right now, but I think this is a number you should call. Here's an option for you. Being able to give the dispatcher a little bit of the responsibility to do the job, and not just, you know, take the information, put the call in without any discernment. That was something that happened while I was still working, that part of the job was taken away from us, the thinking part, where it's like, no, this isn't, police officers shouldn't be going on this. And then you'd have to explain to the police, I'm sorry about the call. And they'd call you up and they'd say, you got to be kidding me. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm being made to send you on this call. I don't know if it's still like that. I can't see that it's changed a lot that way, but that was one of the frustrating parts of the job.
You had a 31-year career. That must have been a lot of phone calls. And what's a situation that you remember from that 31-year career, that one special call where you thought, you know, this is why I joined?
There's a lot of those calls. I had the hardest time with suicide calls. And I think one of the reasons why was because I actually took a phone call at work when we were still on Wentworth Street from that a very dear friend of mine had committed suicide. Someone I knew very, very well, one of my best friends at the time. So I had a very difficult time with that. When you take that phone call, and I never forget, it was a call, Clarence McVale was the RCMP officer that called it in. And it was a devastating day. So I always found it a little difficult. Suicide calls are tough. But I can remember one time, a guy, I'll just call him Mike. Mike called up and he was suicidal. And I talked to Mike on the phone for a very long time. And he was going to do it. We talked about a lot of things, and I was just keeping him on the phone to make sure that he didn't follow through on what he planned to do. And he cried on the phone. We're on for a long time. And I know I used to be made fun of by some of the police officers who'd say, oh, you're not a social worker. Well, in this particular case, I couldn't hang up and I had to keep talking to this guy. And I did. And at the end of the conversation, and it was well over an hour, I did eventually get him help. I got somebody to him. He called a couple of times and afterwards to thank me for saving his life. And he said, I can't thank you enough if you hadn't spent that time. That to me is why, one of the reasons I did that job. If you can save one life, it is a life of service. It's very humbling to be able to be a part of that. And the thing about it, Tim, when you finish with those calls with people, mm-hmm. you don't get to walk away and take a breath. You've got to answer the next call. There's no, well, I think I'll go lay down now, or I'll go do something else to make myself feel better. You're ready for the next call. It's really, really important for people to know that voice on the other end of the phone is a person with feelings, with families, and with their own issues. You know, it's really funny because somebody can call up on the phone and say, you know, you help them out on the phone. And they say, thank you so much. That was really great. I really appreciated the time you spent and what you said to me, and thank you. And you go, you're welcome.
Obviously, the call that you had where you spoke to the fellow for an hour and you de-escalated it, I can really hear in that story the link between your friend and this fellow. I can feel the notion that you wish you had been there for her as well. Were there ever any calls that you took that after you were done the call, you thought, do you believe this? Like, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
There are some really funny ones. There are definitely, I don't know if I can talk about them on this podcast.
Share one with us.
Let's see, a really funny one. Well, it was really funny. Here's one from 911. I thought this was really cute. So when people used to call 911, this is a later one near the end of my career. And this guy, when you call 911, if you hang up the phone, we have to call you back. We can't just let you go. We have to keep trying. So I'm ringing the phone back and ringing the phone back. And finally this guy answers. And I said, 911, what is your emergency? He said, I didn't call 911. I said, is your phone number 992, blah, blah, blah. And he said, yes. And I said, well, it came up on 911. And I said, and he said, well, I didn't call 911. And I said, well, I'm afraid to tell you, but you did. And I said, can you speak to me freely? And he said, what? And I said, can you speak to me freely? Because that was one of the things we had to ask them. Like, were they, you know, in trouble? Can you speak to me freely? And he said, oh yeah. He said, it's free after 6. And I hung up the phone, or I pressed the button, and I lost my mind. And I sent it out to everybody at work that night. I said, I just got the best 911 call ever. that this guy couldn't get through, or he didn't realize he called it. And I said, when I asked him if he could speak freely, he said, oh, yes, it's free after six. And I thought, if I was ever going to write a book about 911, I'd call it, yes, it's free after six. It was hilarious. Everybody just roared because we needed a little bit of laughter. Yeah, it's free after six. And another one that was kind of cute, this guy calls up. No, I don't think it was either 5020 or it could have been 911. Doesn't matter. It's one of the phones anyway. This guy calls up and he said, I said, 911, I didn't get my pizza. I said, oh, you didn't get your pizza. Where was the pizza from? So he told me where it was. It was in Dartmouth. And I said, well, I'm sorry you didn't get your pizza, but have yourself a good night. But I got some information from him first. And I sat there and I thought, maybe I should just send a car by just to check the place out, just in case, you know, it's been shot up or something, because that's where the brain goes. Right? So I sent them over and I said, just drive. I didn't put a call in. I said, just take a drive by. Tell me what you see. And they said, no, place is all closed up, but there is a pizza under the heat and light. Maybe the box under the heating lamp. Maybe that's his. But anyway, it was, you know, you just don't know. You don't know. Should I send it? I don't know. He didn't get his pizza. And yeah, those calls do come in. Those calls absolutely do come in.
Donna,
and then there's some really, really, somebody called up one time. She was a God lover. She was a regular caller. And I remember something my father had said years ago, and it was too funny. I thought, I want to use that line someday. So anyway, she called me up. It was Friday night just after 5 o'clock when she'd call, because community services had been closed. So the lady, she said to me, I can use her voice, but I don't want to make fun of anybody because that wouldn't be kind. But she said, can you call me a taxi? And I said, I've been waiting for this all my life. Okay, you're a taxi. And then she had some unchoice words and hung up, but we had a good chuckle over it. And
Donna, you went from being a naive young mother to being an experienced person within the police environment. 31 years is a long time, but ultimately you were in a team.
When we were still in Dartmouth and the Orchevsky girls were killed in that terrible accident up on Portland Street, That was tough for everybody. I was the dispatcher on that call and sent the officers to that location. After all of that happened, it was the first time in my career with the police department that they had what they called a debriefing. We had all kinds of other calls, but this was the call that started, I guess, what we would call EAP. So we were all invited in to, and we were up in the Eric Spicer building at that time, into a briefing room where we did a debriefing of that event. And I can remember the first time actually feeling like part of the team. This is a team. This is important, because they went around the room and everybody talked about what their job was that particular day. They went around the room and everyone that was involved talked about that. And then they went around the room afterwards and talked about how you felt about that day. And that was one of the most profound experiences in my police career. That was tough. That's still tough. That's still a tough one.
Help me understand from your perspective what it felt like to be part of that team.
It just made me realize why I did what I did, why I was there, and how important the job actually was. If there was any fog before, it certainly cleared exactly why I did what I did and why police do what they do. To me, that's the epitome of teamwork and getting things done. It was very, like I say, very profound. It's an experience. So I think about it once in a while, not very often, but it certainly brings tears. It really does.
What was the brilliance of that message? Because it sounds like it's so important and people need to hear that. What did that situation teach you about you and the police?
it taught me to take this job right to heart. Take this to heart. This is a very serious job. What we do to look after people and care for people and each other is paramount. It's your heart to serve people.
As you're sitting in the room with the police and with a debriefer and you're talking about your roles, what I heard you say was that the important message you learned in that moment was that in this role of service, we matter. And when you say we matter, you mean your team, we matter. You mean the community, we matter. You mean absolutely everyone that's experiencing hardship, grief, and pain, we matter.
Absolutely.
That's a really, really profound lesson to take. And what it actually does is disintegrates the barriers between us and them. Because there is no us, there is no them, there's just we.
There's just we, absolutely.
We matter.
We do matter.
And so a 31-year career in the police, listening to some of the most horrific things a person can hear, the message you took away from that is we matter.
It is.
Wow.
We matter, and we need to be heard.
And we need to be together, you know? I think that's really, really profound.
It is. It is very profound. And the way it is today, even more so.
When folks call up 911, they're talking to someone's mother, they're talking to someone's wife, they're talking to someone's sister, someone's brother, someone's dad, someone's friend.
Someone's child.
That's it. And that person that's on the other end of the call, that person, that human being, has this ultimate message that after 31 years of service, they'll learn, and that 31 years of service tells them we matter. I mean, that's the long and short of it. We matter. And that's why we do what we do. And it's why we cry in the bathtub. And it's why we laugh. We laugh on the phone. It's the whole spectrum, isn't it?
There's been a lot of laughter. There's been a lot of tears. But I'm so grateful to have been able to serve my community for as long as I did and leave there with a little bit Still sense, good sense of humor, and I care about people. I still care about people, and I certainly care about my coworkers. And I'm so grateful to still be in touch with so many of them.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, Tim. I appreciate the time.
You've been listening to Tim Brody and the show Moving Forward, an offering in relationships, team building, and leadership, sponsored by the Brodies.ca and the Police Leadership Development Academy of Canada. This episode featured Donna Marilyn McDonald, a retired dispatcher from the Halifax Police Services. Her career experience taught her how much we all matter, and she encourages us to look beyond the uniform, to listen beyond the label, and to find the humanity in each of us. We didn't talk about something else that's been a truly important part of Donna's life. She's been a performer for years now. As we fade out on this show, let me share with you one of her keynote songs. This one is written by Scott Ferguson, a multiple ECMA winner and son of an RCMP member, and Graham Sweetapple, a retired military member, and it's sung by our friend, Donna Marilyn McDonald. It's entitled appropriately, PTSD. I know you'll appreciate it. Thanks for listening.
You lie beside me every night, hoping your love would make things misunderstood from the start. You walk and talk and play the part. Just take a pill and then ignore the price you pay to go to war. I've tried to keep the demons outside, but my mind is full of pain. From metal round my neck. Told me the world would not forget, but I'm left here holding all this pain. The hell inside my I've done.